In this episode of the Smart City Podcast, I had a great chat with a fellow member of the Future Leaders, Future Cities delegation, Bronwyn Voice. Bronwyn is currently a consultant at GWI. However, she has a wide and varied background, which we dive deep into. Now, Bronwyn and I talk about the concept of smart councils and how smart cities is a way to kind of reach our potential. We also talk a lot about the sharing economy, policy, data access, a bit of karaoke thrown in there, talking about it, not actually doing it. And we also talk about our trip to Japan, and also Bronwyn visited Hong Kong after the trip to Japan. So she shares a little bit on that as well in this episode. Now, we did talk for quite a while. We had a lot to go over. So we've broken this episode into two parts. So the first part is what I just mentioned. The second part, you'll hear the rest of our conversation about the observations of the smart happenings in Hong Kong and Japan, and also talking about people challenges, disaster resilience, what Bronwyn is working on, and emerging trends. So hopefully you can tune in to the second part of this episode as well. So as always, I hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed making it.
It's the Smart City Podcast, whoa, with smart city experts, here we go. Connecting smart technology, both big and small. Smart cities are making life better for all. Big data, emerging trends, self-driving cars and more. The Smart City Podcast is what you're looking for.
Hello, Bronwyn. How are you?
Hi, Zoe. I am great. It's so good that we finally got some time to do this. We've been talking about it for months.
I know. I'm really excited to have you on the podcast. So let's jump straight into it. And can you tell us about your background and what you're passionate about?
Sure. So I've had a bit of an interesting path, I think, particularly in the last few years. My original or early career was in banking and finance, and so worked, you know, with one-on-one with customers, SMEs, and building individual businesses and, you know, making their dreams come true. And after the GFC and a pretty tough time in that industry, I also kind of felt that I wanted to do something that had more impact and had, you know, benefited more people. So I decided to jump into this space called regional development, which I, at the time in my early 20s, didn't know a lot about what that meant. And I enrolled in a master's degree in economic development, and I was on the path to a whole new sort of career. And I guess really from there, just absolutely fell in love with helping, you know, or contributing to a much broader agenda that was bigger than, you know, any one business and any one person. So from that path, I've worked in not-for-profits, I've worked in local government, I've done a bit of consulting as a sole trader for federal and state government contracts, and then that kind of led me down this, I guess, this path of this service and wanting to serve my community. And I ended up finishing my master's as a with the international community development. So had this really sort of strong economic development, community development, regional development flavor. And from there, decided to run for local council in a regional town up in far north Queensland. So that was a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. So that's one of the most rewarding, one of the most challenging times of my life, certainly, being in the public service and being a public a servant that's an elected representative as well. You know, people put a whole or have a whole new perspective and a whole new way that they treat you as an elected official. But it was so it was very rewarding, but it was also very challenging. And at the beginning of the year, I decided I'd come down to Brisbane and joined a consultancy firm down here called GWI, a data and information firm. And I'm working in their civic innovation and smart cities practice. And that brings us to our discussion today.
Awesome. Yeah, you definitely have had a wide and varied background, and I obviously knew snippets of it, but yeah, really, really interesting. And I think it's really great to bring that to the smart city space. You can appreciate kind of all different facets of what's happening, and, you know, smart city is all about serving the the people. So yeah, no, really, really cool. So what kind of sparked your interest in the smart city space specifically?
Sure. So it was probably, I'd say a little bit before my time as a councillor and being in a role of economic development where you're thinking about new ways to enhance the operating environment for businesses to operate, for jobs to be created, and ultimately improve, the livability, the investability, and the financial sustainability of a region. And, smart cities is really, kind of fits all around that. And as a local government councillor and thinking about the future of my region, the future of my council, I really kind of started thinking a bit more and looking towards the cities and, what are other places doing around the world? And that's where, this trend or theme or, this thing called smart cities really started to emerge. And for me, I guess it's, there's a lot of, and I know we'll unpack a bit of it, and there's a lot of parts to it, but it was really around that, how do I make my place better? What's happening, in the bigger world out there? What can we learn from what other places are doing? And how can we apply that in a way that is relevant to a rural town or a regional city or an urban and metropolitan area? And there's no one answer for any of that.
Mm, yeah, definitely. So what, you've kind of answered it already, but what is a smart city to you?
So I guess I think, as I said, there's a lot of facets to it. So I tend to think in a couple ways. So having a local government background and with local government being really at the forefront and the centre and the absolutely kind of fundamental stakeholder in building this thing we call smart cities, there needs to be a smart council or a smart local government component. And that actually starts with some really simple stuff around digital transformation, which I think, we've started the journey in Australia, more so in metropolitan areas, to a more emerging extent in regional cities and to a much lesser extent, outside of that in rural and remote councils. So to get that, that really kind of fundamental, the way that we deliver our services, in a way that we use data and information to meet the needs of our citizens and our residents, and in a way that solves problems of the people that are living in our place. So there's that digital transformation smart council aspect, and then there's the smart community aspect. And that for me is really about, how we thinking about enabling the way that we live our lives, the way we do business, the way we work, the way we access services. So, when we think about future of work, when we think about mobility, whether it's in an urban centre or whether it's, in a geographically dispersed region, all of the way that we start to think about that in, 21st century in this digital age, we need to be doing it in a way that's smarter. And yes, that does include technology, and that is part of the conversation and part of the solution, but it's not front and center. It's about human-centered design for me in the first instance. What are the problems that we're trying to solve for our community? What are the issues that we need to overcome as a local government? And then how do we think about designing solutions around that in a much smarter way, utilizing the technology that we have, or the emerging technology, and also using behavioral insights and, understanding why people make decisions to hop on that train or that bus, or why they make decisions to live in one place and drive to, the next local government area for work. So all of those kind of, I could probably speak for days on this, but, all of those bits and pieces all form part of, I think, this thing that we talk about in smart cities. And it's really about, how do we use data? How do we use human-centered design to make better places for people to live and visit, do business, have jobs, learn, and so forth?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think you've kind of answered the next question as well, which is like, why is this so important? Like, why is this smart city space so important?
Really good question. I think it's so important because it's about potential. So when you think about place, there are, you know, the diversity of opportunities and the extremities of barriers and challenge mean that every single place, you know, comes with its own unique kind of identity. But we also share a lot of, you know, the similarities between, you know, some of the challenges and some of the opportunities. And it's about finding new ways to really ignite the potential of those places so that, you know, we're creating better places, whether it's an urban center, or a rural center. We're creating better places for people and we're enabling potential to arise.
Mm. Yeah. No, I like that, thought about potential, not just what is now, but what the potential is. So yeah, no, I think that's really important.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's about addressing today's problems, but it's also about thinking about, you know, the future, which, you know, is a very challenging thing to do sometimes when, you know, you just have to worry about delivering services, getting bins emptied today, you know, fixing potholes in roads, you know, all those kind of challenges that local government and, you know, local and cities have. But then thinking about the future and as it's emerging, when people will be interacting with, you know, the way that they work differently, they'll be wanting different things from transport. I mean, just, I give a very, you know, a pertinent example about the Ubers and the Deliveroos and the, you know, Uber Eats that come, turn up on my street every day, every hour of the day. And there's just things like there's not enough parking for them or stop zones. And, you know, people are using new ways of living, new ways of consuming, new ways of mobility. And we need to start thinking about, you know, addressing some of those now, but also what that future looks like. Do we need a different, you know, a planning scheme that thinks more about, you know, a smart, urban mobility strategy, or, you know, the sharing economy? And, you know, do buildings need to have more or less parking if we're going to have, you know, autonomous vehicles? And so I think all those things, you know, are encapsulated in why we need to be thinking about smart cities and the future of them, but also addressing some of the issues that we have now.
Mm, yeah, no, I agree. And I think the people will tell us through their actions what they want. Like, it's not like they're going to wait for a planning policy for, you know, Deliveroo or, you know, to address that issue. And I think sometimes you still, I mean, a lot of the time you still won't catch it before it's, you know, before it's a thing, but hopefully we can catch it before there's an incident. I just think of, like, you know, the sharing economy, hasn't really hit us, as much, like, yet, I think. Like, I think we're talking about the sharing economy, and I think it's going to become more and more prevalent. And it's not necessarily that we know all the answers. Oh, well, if we do this, then that will solve that problem or that kind of thing. It's more, we just need to be thinking about it now and start that kind of innovative thinking process without using innovation, because that word's way overused. But just kind of having people thinking about this, I think, is really important. And that's where I think the smart city concept really brings people together to start thinking about it. And I think the collaboration piece, has really brought smart cities to the forefront, which I think is really useful for then governments to, you know, they obviously have a lot of, like you said, the issues that are happening right now. They need to empty bins. They need to do these things. These things are obviously very important. But if they can then start leveraging some of these other people that are already starting to collaborate on the smart city space, then I think they can use that knowledge to everyone's advantage, which, you know, that open source kind of data and that kind of thing.
Yeah, look, and I think you've hit the nail on the head there a bit, Zoe. I think the narrative about smart cities in terms of the emerging, you know, discourse, both in a public space, but also, you know, even in the commercial space around, you know, what this looks like, what it means, how do we build smart cities, how do we capitalize it? That in itself is driving those conversations, which is really important. And the smarts are in using the data that we have access to, and the problems that people are telling us that they have now. You know, we knew Uber was going to be coming to Australia. We knew it was going to come to Queensland at some point. We knew it was going to come to Brisbane. We knew it was probably going to go to Cairns. And I think we're a little bit on the back foot with some of our policy around that. and thinking about the way that we could better leverage. So what sort of Uber data does the government have access to? Do we know how many people are using rideshares at the moment? Do we know what routes they're taking? You know, there's a whole bunch of things that smart cities, you know, that is a smart about, you know, you thinking about cities that we could be doing better, I think, just now in the immediate term with, you know, data and information, that we just haven't quite, I think that's quite a sort of a simple example. But then I just think about autonomous vehicles, and I know you've done a fair bit in this space, so I don't want to by any means pretend that I'm an expert, but, you know, are we just going to wait until there's an autonomous, fully autonomous vehicle on our roads before we think about the future of autonomy, in our mobility space in Queensland?
Mm. And I think also, with the autonomous vehicle and the Uber example, I think you, again, I don't want to use your words because you just use them for me, but you hit the nail on the head, with the, knowing what data that they have. And so what you need to do in that space, and again, like, I'm not an expert in this space either, in rideshare, but I'm trying to learn more and more, but it's more like if we knew that it was happening, if we actually acted on that, then we would be able to regulate. So then we have that data. So I'm not anti-regulation, but that's the thing. If we actually have people thinking about these things, we can start putting regulations and policy or whatever, because regulation at the end of the day are trying to keep the community safe. Like, it's, I don't agree with over-regulating either, but if we started to regulate that earlier, then we would have all this data, like you just said, and you could then compare it to, okay, well, people taking Ubers or rideshare, Ola, whatever, instead of public transport. And okay, well, how can we address that? And there's so much you can do with that data. And it's really important. And I think autonomous vehicles is a great example as well. That we're starting to think about it. But there's a high chance that we'll get Uberized again, because it'll become accessible, to people that can afford it. And then it will become even further accessible because they'll work out different business models that make sense to get it into the market before all the regulation comes, which, you know, so there's so much in that space. It's so interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think we could talk all day on that.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's, because you and I went to Tokyo recently.
We did.
And that was awesome. And the karaoke was lots of fun.
Oh, yes. Can I say that one of my highlights was pretending to be a backup singer for Zoe, as the karaoke queen on the delegation.
Oh, stop.
She has a phenomenal voice. I know what her number one karaoke song is. If anybody, wants to know, they can certainly reach out to me and I can share that little slip of information. it was a wonderful, wonderful trip.
Yeah. Let's talk about it a little bit, because I know you spent some time in Hong Kong as well. So I'm keen to hear your thoughts. I know you weren't there for very long either, but let's talk about Tokyo and Hong Kong in whatever order you like, and how they're embracing the smart city concept, do you think?
Okay. So, I mean, I say this with, you know, explicit that I spent about 4 days in each of the two places. So, you know, I'm not pretending to be an expert. But any stretch of the imagination.
Yep. Surface level. Yep.
Absolutely. Yep. But these are sort of my observations, I guess, in terms of, and I've been reflecting on this quite a lot. So the first thing was, I think, and I'd like to, we can go back to Tokyo, but I think if I just an immediate thought, is the best way that I can describe the contrast between Tokyo and Hong Kong for me was order versus chaos. But both of them were incredibly amazing. So when I say that I think about Tokyo, in terms of they're a very organized society culturally, the Japanese have a way of, conducting themselves, the way that they participate in society, the way that they, you know, behave in public. It's just a very kind of, coming from Australia, I think, you know, there was a number of times we were wandering around the city and we'd have to kind of remind ourselves to be a little bit more quiet and respectful and line up properly and do sorts of things that Tokyans do, if that's a word. And then going to Hong Kong, you know, it was like absolute chaos. So there's a massive expat community there, that is noticeable in the central district. And then, you know, over in Kowloon is just phenomenal in terms of the amount of, you know, things that are happening, redevelopment, and the general overarching kind of busyness and sort of noise and, you know, hustle and bustle of the city. And I think that contrast was just something really interesting because, you know, both places are striving towards this smart city. They're both thinking about, you know, how do we put more sensors on lampposts to, you know, get more information about what's happening in our streets? And, you know, how do we get private sector to work better with the government? How do we deal with aging populations and grow, you know, millennial generational challenge? You know, all those kind of things. But they're just very, you know, they're very different. And then, you know, I think particularly in Hong Kong, I thought, you know, I felt a little bit overwhelmed. I thought, how can you ever transform a place that has just got so much going on every second of the day? How can you transform this whole entire place to be smart? You know, how do you get the street traders in the markets to, you know, think about smart waste and recycling better? And, you know, how do you get taxi drivers who drive far more chaotically, I think, than they do in Tokyo, to, you know, adhere to different ways of mobility? And you know, I couldn't pay with a credit card in my taxi or even my train card in Hong Kong. Whereas in Tokyo, you know, it's all linked to the one card system and I can pay for my taxi with the same card that I get on a train with. So it was just really contrasting, both super, super interesting places. But, yeah, happy to have a bit more of a chat about Tokyo, given, you know, you and I were both there and shared that experience.
I think I've been to Hong Kong as well, but only for, leisure. And I found definitely the chaos, but it's quite an, for a tourist, it's quite an easy place to be, right? It's just easy to get around, I suppose. And there's so much to do.
Absolutely.
I mean, I don't necessarily enjoy that all of the time, but it was, when I went, I quite enjoyed that kind of relaxation of travel, but so much going on. So you could do everything, if that even makes any sense at all.
Yeah. Look, by day four, I mean, I was hoping Qantas could, you know, by mistake, cancel my flights and I could spend a few more extra days there, or weeks or months. I fell in love with all that was going on in Hong Kong.
Hello, Smart City friends. So I really hope you enjoyed part one of this episode. Tune in to part two, coming out shortly, and you'll hear more from Bron about Hong Kong, Japan, people challenges, what she's working on. So I hope you can tune into that episode, which will be the next one coming out. Talk soon. Bye.
It's the Smart City Podcast. Whoa.
Thanks so much for listening to the Smart City Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes can be found at thesmartcitypodcast.com. If you have any questions or comments for me or any of my guests, connect with me via email, zoe@thesmartcitypodcast.com, or via the socials. I'm on Twitter and Facebook @smartcitypod. As always, I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed making it.
Smart City Podcast is what you're looking for.